And the occupation was there to respond to that and to all respond to the evictions that we're still seeing in South Africa, and sorry, more specifically in Cape Town. The fact that people in SIPO, the domestic workers, like Mrs. Sheila here, is facing an eviction, and if she can't find alternative accommodation within the city, she'll then be forced to move into the peripheries, into the informal settlements, into 30 to 35 kilometers. So she'll be far from everything. Mm-hmm. And she was raised in Sea Point and worked in Sea Point for more than 20 years. So
why can't she stay there?
Yeah, so this is what was informing the occupation itself,
okay,
to respond to those cries and struggles, and to amplify the voices of those people who are at times, most of the times, ignored. We planned this to be a symbolic occupation.
Mm-hmm.
The plan was to try and get inside these two buildings, try and stay there for 3 days,
okay,
without being seen. But the security guards, Sarita and myself, were the first occupiers. And she'll tell you how awkward it was having to whisper for more than 2 days. And I got caught, it was the second day.
Mm-hmm.
On the second day, on my journey to go around the building to find water, because we had run out of water and we needed water, and it was fucking hot. a building where the windows are closed with like planks like this, and it's very dark inside.
Mm-hmm.
And when they discovered me, I wanted to run away, but I was like, no, if I run, then they will search the whole building, rather go to them and just give myself up to them.
Okay.
Questioned me, pretended to be a university student who was at the waterfront. Couldn't keep track of time, and if there isn't enough, there isn't transport going to Woodstock where I'm staying, and that I'm scared that this shouldn't be known by my uncle, whom my aunt is staying with, and they
asked, made up
a this is all made up in like 5 minutes, playing into their sympathy, and having them sympathizing with me. I was like, guys, I can leave now. The point was for me to just sleep over for this day and then tomorrow leave and walk home. And it's far from home, and I'm scared to walk through the city to the other side of the city during this time. And they called my aunt, Hope Lang. So when they called, they asked for my aunt's number. I was like, who do I say is my aunt? I thought of people from the movie, and I was like, no. This one person would mess this up. I'd rather say Hope Lang. So I said Hope Lang, and then they called Hope Lang and they asked if she knows me. And she was aware that we were inside the museum and that everyone was on standby. She was at home when they called, and she came over, and she pretended to be this angry aunt. Was like, I gave you money, what have you done with this money? So all of that happened, and I managed to come back to the building.
Okay.
So the way we got in, which is the first time that I'm talking about it, and if it's sensitive in the fact that this might put security guards' job at risk.
Yes.
We pretended I was tasked to look at, kind of investigate the building to see what times do they change the shifts and what time do they get in, what time do the night shift ends and all of that.
Yep.
And that included being outside the building and watching and sitting and watching them. Like an FBI
private investigator.
I'm
very jealous.
So we did that, and we got all the information. We knew what time they're changing the shift. We got to be inside the building, pretended to be university students who were doing research and wanting to look at the building, and then they let us in. We formulated our plan, and then our plan was for our wife to come, because we saw that there was a dog at the back that was caged.
Okay.
And they were not taking the dog around for walks and stuff. The dog is always caged and in that. So we used that as our way to get him to say, our white comrades, they should pretend to be SPCA. So that's
animals.
So they pretended to be that, and they had like a fake pamphlet pretended to be volunteers. They got in, so we were on the phone and waiting for them. The key word was to say, we are feeding the dog, because they had brought food for the dog, and to say, to question why. So they asked everyone, all the security guards, to say, come with me now, I want to look at the dog. I'm from SPCA, and everyone came. They were scared, and they told them that we from the Western Cape government knows that we're here. And they've authorized us to be here. So everyone was scared not to lose their job.
Yes.
And spent time with our comrades in terms of delaying them, keeping them there so that we can come inside the building. There's on the building, the building's gate is not closed.
Okay.
You can push and get inside. So that's how we got in.
Pardon?
So that's even when I came back, that's we used that same tactic to say we're here for to check where things are. We were here, we showed you how to wash the dog. We brought you now shampoo and this brush. We want you to see how, I mean, you wash it now in front of us. It was not nice because it was white people and also black people
too. Yep.
But we had to use that because that still is showing how racism still
exists
in Cape Town. The fact that a white person is still seen as superior to a black person. So that helped us a lot to get inside. We stayed there for 3 days, and they discovered us on the third day. Because they were doing their patrols.
Okay.
And one curious lady, I don't know why she was looking into that window. She wanted on this one day to look over that window. There's a window like in front of the door. There's windows like over there. And she climbed over and she looked. As she looked, we could hear them, but our mattresses were all over the place and we couldn't like, take them and hide them.
Yeah.
And they discovered us. And by then we had supporters on standby.
Okay.
Who were camping at a comrade's house. So they all came in numbers. So you now it's like 12 o'clock.
Yeah.
No, 2 o'clock in the morning.
In the morning.
And you have our comrades outside, we're like 15 to 20. We have our lawyer there outside as well.
Right.
Communicating with us. And so we used that moment to actually for the first time speak louder and to sing. So we started singing inside, and the security guards were scared and didn't know what to do. And we approached them to say, guys, we have these demands, and on our demands, we have a demand that speaks specifically to the security guards, saying that they should not be fired because they had no knowledge of this action, and they have no affiliation of any kind into this action.
Yeah.
So we gave them that assurance that this will not had impact into their job, and they won't lose their jobs in front of this. So we were waiting to get a response. There was no response first day, second day no response. There's like comrades who are camping outside the whole time. As you know, the momentum is going back. People have been there for now 3 days outside at this site. The comrades from Woodstock have not been discovered yet.
Okay.
So we decided that we were going to announce. So we occupied on Friday, we're going to announce on a Monday, and we announced on the same day, on the following day, because we discovered on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Following day, we announced that on the two sides.
Yeah.
And there was always presence of comrades around, outside the Ellen Baroness's home, which is now called Ahmed Kachala House.
Yeah.
So we at some point we called, we went outside to speak to the comrades to address them, to announce our demands. Media was outside, kept taking pictures, different newspapers coming in and wanting to interview us, and we're going out and being interviewed. And we saw that our comrades have been there for now more than a week. It was a Thursday when we said we have to go and release on a Wednesday we decided that we're gonna bring everyone in. Because the plan was to actually have changed the occupiers.
Okay.
The people who had been there initially to be changed and to give other people a chance to go inside as well.
Okay.
So we pretended to have this press conference. There were comrades who were speaking outside and singing. And as we were speaking on the megaphone, one of our comrades had like a board cutter. And he cut off the chain and everyone went inside. And the province now, and there was a representative of the province and the security guards, we are shocked in that this would not, there's no one that's going to pick them up, there's no one who will harm them, and that they should just become and just be interactive with people. Because they also want the people that we're fighting for, we want them to get decent accommodation.
Yes.
A struggle for housing cannot be isolated from the struggle of the workers. And at this point in time, we have everyone inside on the courtyard of the site. And we're making speeches, we're singing, our comrades saluting us, and we're interacting with them. This is now after 3 days being inside and not being able to speak out loud. And to now we have this opportunity to sing and to address our comrades, and it's we're all happy. And we decided that the following day we'll have a meeting to talk about a way forward. So we had a meeting, and in the meeting we resolved that anyone who wants to occupy can come inside. But because the Gatherings Act is not allowing you to have a protest action or any political action without placing a notice if you're more than 15. So we decided that we keep the numbers below 15 and below, so that we cannot breach that act. So we had people rotating in terms of coming in, and now the supporters of Rickland City are bringing supplies for people to get inside, and you have the same thing for the two sides.
Okay.
The weekend after we were discovered, we also went to Woodstock and had a political meeting. To talk about a way forward of the Woodstock occupation.
Okay.
And we decided that the two occupations should be kept symbolically as temporary for now.
Okay.
But at some point, we're looking into having these occupations being permanent.
Okay.
And we've invited someone from Joburg who has been involved in reclaiming buildings in Joburg. And that is not to replicate what they did.
No, but it's
to basically learn from their experiences and to see how we can use the Joburg model to fit the Cape Town model.
Yep.